Welcome to Syracuse On Stage, a podcast that pulls back the curtain and explores the process of creating theater in the heart of Central New York. I'm your host, Melissa Crespo, the Associate Artistic Director of Syracuse Stage, currently recording from WCNY Studios in Syracuse, and it is my honor to welcome former Artistic Director of Syracuse Stage, Bob Moss. Hello, Bob.
Hi. Very happy to be here.
I'm so happy you're here, too. So, yeah, we have so much to talk about because you were at Syracuse Stage for 10 years. You were our third Artistic Director, but you've also had an indelible mark on the American theater. And for me personally, you've also had a direct impact on my own career for all of the things that you've done. So I'm super grateful for that.
Okay. Well, I'm glad, I suppose. I don't know what I've done. But
well, I love Playwrights Horizons. I go there all the time. I've developed work there. I did the director's lab at Hangar Theater, which you started.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So, and now here I am, Associate Artistic Director at Syracuse Stage, which you had a hand in. So,
yes.
Yeah, here we are. We're connected.
Okay.
So, I want to get right into Syracuse Stage.
Okay.
It is our 50th anniversary. And I love that you live here in Central New York.
Yep.
Still. You've had such a storied career. It would take the whole interview to talk about your resume. you know, you founded Playwrights Horizons. You were artistic director at the Hangar Theater. You helped develop Theater Row on 42nd Street. And then you found your way to Syracuse Stage. So what helped you get to that place in your career?
I guess my stubbornness.
I like that answer.
At a certain point, while I was running the Hangar, I thought to myself, you know, because people have mistaken me for being incredibly ambitious, which I never was.
Really?
If I'd been ambitious, believe me, I'd be in Hollywood right now doing some stupid series. But
not right now. There's a strike.
Oh, right. Yes.
But I know what you mean.
So, but what I was energetic, and people confuse that a lot. And I was offered, in the heyday of Playwrights Horizons, in the first 10 years, I was offered a soap. And they paid $1,500 an episode, and you only had to do two or three a week, Bob, the guy said to me. And I said, I don't think I'd be good at it. And the guy said to me, you don't have to be good at it. And I said to him, do you think that's making it more attractive? I think I'll pass.
What? Can I ask what soap?
I don't know. I think it would have been something with doctors.
Okay.
I don't know.
General Hospital or something?
Maybe.
Like?
Oh. I don't know. I was offered one.
Okay.
To start in, and you only have to do one or two a week or something. And they're 50. We were, I guess I was making $100 a week. I don't know. Something like that. Couldn't have been much more. We didn't have any money. So I turned it down because it would have been a stepping stone to going to L.A.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to. I'd visited the General Hospital. Was that one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think I knew the designer.
Uh-huh.
A loose term, believe me, on soaps. But I think he invited me to spend a day. So I did. I mean, you know, I was curious about it.
Yeah.
And it seemed so stupid. And I just thought, I don't want to do this because it's not directing, you know, camera one, camera two, camera one, camera three, camera one. I mean, that's not directing. I mean, it is, but it's a different kind.
Yeah.
And I wasn't interested. It didn't seem to be about people. It seems to be about cameras and other things. And I thought, I don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I turned it down, and I knew that this was a momentous moment. But I didn't care. I was having fun on 42nd Street, you know. So I wasn't ambitious,
mm-hmm.
obviously, or I'd have been a lot further along.
Mm.
And I wouldn't be sitting here now. I'd be in L.A.
That's true. Or do you remember what time, when that was, when you were
Well, it had to be late 70s.
Okay.
Because I left in 81. So somewhere in the late 70s,
Mm. Yeah, because Playwrights Horizon started in 1971.
Started in 71 at the Y.
Yeah.
And then moved to 42nd Street in 75.
Got it.
And then we were off and running. And then I also had the Queen's Theater in the Park simultaneously.
Yeah, you did.
That was neat. I loved it, but everybody else on the staff, and including the board, hated it and wanted me out of there, or wanted us out of there. And I was not about to do that. I thought it was important financially. And Marty Sherman, a playwright, said that he'd rather his plays were done out there because those were real audiences. Mm. Whereas on 42nd Street, we had maybe 150 seats, and they'd all be friends or agents or what have you. So you couldn't trust their responses. Whereas in Queens, we just had theater goers.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were trustworthy, and they were smart. Mm. They weren't, they were school teachers mostly. A lot of them were retired school teachers. So they were smart, and they wanted good theater.
Yeah.
So that's what I tried to do, you know.
Wow.
So that's when that would have happened, somewhere in there. And I didn't, it didn't occur to me to parlay this into something more. But something more kept happening. In other words, I was invited to do a play at the Hangar, just one play. And I almost didn't go, considering my 15-year reign there. But I almost didn't go because the idea of using local actors struck me as not a good idea.
Oh, why?
And that, well, because they wouldn't be trained actors, and I wanted to work with good people.
Gotcha.
So in that sense, I was ambitious, but it's not major.
The quality of the theater was what you were ambitious about.
Yes.
That
yes.
makes sense.
Yes.
And I think that's a good ambition.
I think that's good. So I almost didn't go, and then I ran into somebody who said, oh, you're going to go to Ithaca. Let me give you a list of the good restaurants, plural. And I thought, restaurants? I thought, I imagined that I would be eating at some drugstore at the corner of two dusty roads. I didn't know what Ithaca was.
Yeah.
I'd actually been there once before, but for a day, so I didn't have any sense of it. But when I got there, when I finally talked myself into going, I finally said, Bob, it's 2 weeks. You love the play. It's The Rainmaker. I love the play. It's
I love
a
that
wonderful play.
Play.
You got the time. The money's decent. Just go. Why are you such a, why are you making it so difficult for yourself? So I went. And, of course, Jimmy Smits was the rainmaker because he was an MFA student at Cornell.
Really?
So that wasn't too bad.
Not at all.
You know, and some of the other actors were MFA students as well, and there were some excellent actors in the community. So I had a great, and it was the first time I was working in a, on a thrust stage.
Mm.
I love that theater.
Me too.
It's a great space to work
I've,
in.
I've
and
worked
if
in
you
that
figure it out, it's not evenly divided.
Mm-hmm.
It's like this, you know, it's a little bit of a twist to it. You have to learn that, which I finally did. I mean, but I loved that space, and I think it's just a great space. You can have the intimacy, or you can have the proscenium feel, you just depending on where you are on stage. So I loved it. And Alfred Gingold, who was the artistic director who hired me, he'd worked at Playwrights, so we knew each other. I don't think he knew, and I didn't say anything, that I had resigned. He just called me up and asked me to direct in the summer. And so I finally said yes. Broke my heart. I mean, it's stupid. I mean, I was just so stubborn. And I'm a double Taurus.
Oh.
So, you know what I mean? That's really stubborn. So Alfred was fighting with the board about his contract.
Mm.
And I tried desperately to help him and to help the board because I got to meet them all. And to no avail, I just failed at this trying to have a reconciliation between them. And so finally he quit, or they fired him. I'll never know which, and I didn't pursue it.
Yeah.
But it ended. So then Tom Niederkern, who was the town planner, who was the spearhead of all this, came to me and said, Bob, do you want to run the theater? I said, no, I just left Playwrights Horizons. Why would I want to run another theater? God. He said, well, don't you like to put on plays? I said, yeah. He said, well, what don't you want to do? I said, office work. I just said that. And he said, well, don't do any. Now, that's stupid. I mean, you know, you don't run a theater without doing office work.
It's a great idea, though.
It's a great idea. So I agreed that I would be there for 1 year. Mm-hmm. I never had an office. I never had keys, which probably drove a lot of people crazy. And I also never had a second contract. I had a contract for 1 year, and then it all just flowed.
Wow.
Nobody asked me to stay. I didn't say, I think I might stay for another year. I never said that. It just flowed. We were in love, and that was it.
Oh, my goodness.
So I stayed for 15 years. Although somewhere in the middle, for 2 years in a row, the audience dipped a little. And so I said, if it dips for a third year, it means I will have lost touch with the audience and I should resign and you should get somebody else. Mm. They're like, no, 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 Bob. And I'm like, yes, yes, yes. I know what I'm talking about.
That's good advice.
And then the audience went up again. Mm. So, you know, and stayed up. So then I stayed. And I stayed until 96. And I had just begun to, I had just begun to be ambitious.
Wait, and did you ever get keys in those 15 years?
No. I never had keys, and I never had an office.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. It drove up everybody else crazy, I'm sure, in the office.
Wow.
But, no, I never did.
Wow, that's funny.
But I had a lot to say about things.
Yeah.
You know, so I wasn't quiet, mm-hmm. and I did know what my responsibilities were.
Well, you did something right, because you stayed for that long and audiences were coming.
I know. I've outlasted everybody. But I loved the hangar. I still do.
Yeah,
and I
too.
Go. I try to go.
Me
but,
too.
You know. Anyway. So I had begun to be ambitious, and I began to say to myself, you know, you're as smart as any of half these guys that are running theaters. You could run a theater, a real theater. I don't know why I thought the hangar wasn't a real theater, but you could run a theater. I know all these people, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm not any dumber than they are, or whatever. So I began to feel like I should be doing that.
Yeah.
And the next thing I knew, Tazewell had left. So I knew they were looking, and it's right up the road. And I knew Jim Clark because we had been co-members of the New York State Council on the Arts Theater panel for years. Mm-hmm. So I knew he was an affable fellow and smart. And so I called him up, and I said, are you looking for? He said, let's have lunch. I said, okay. And so we had lunch, and he said, let's do it in Ithaca, which was very shrewd of him because he didn't want... He thought immediately that I would be a good contender, I guess. We have never discussed this, but this is what I'm imagining, that he thought I would be a good contender, and therefore he didn't want anybody to see us having lunch. So we had lunch, and we were talking, probably at Moosewood.
I love Moosewood.
Yeah, I know. You always feel virtuous when you eat there, but it isn't really tasty. It's just, you know it's good food, and it's good for you. It's just not, anyway... So we had lunch, and finally we chatted about this, that, and the other thing. And finally I said, so I hear you're looking for a new artistic director. It was a long pause, and he said, yes. And I said, what are you looking for? And he said, I don't know, short Jewish fella. And I said, really? I might know somebody. He said, I bet you do.
Oh.
We were being so coy. So what do you? I said, fine, what do you want me to do? Send me a resume. I said, I can do that.
He wanted a resume from Bob Moss?
Well, yeah, but that was smart.
Uh-huh.
No, that was smart.
Okay.
So I did that, and I was invited to interview in New York. They were going to see 10 people. So I said, okay, here are my conditions for this interview. A little arrogance showing up, but let's, right?
I wish everyone could see the face Bob just made.
So I said, okay, I insist on being first. Mm-hmm. And then I want there to be a half hour between me and the next person. Mm. And if you can do that, I'll agree to be interviewed.
Another face.
Right.
Why the half hour?
Because it was in New York City, and I was running the school at that point for Playwrights Horizons. And New York is a small town.
It is.
And I didn't want anybody thinking, Bob is job hunting.
Yeah.
I didn't want anybody thinking that. So I thought, let's just keep it just a little quiet.
Okay.
We'll see what happens. I mean, I didn't know whether I was going to get it, but I sure knew that I was a contender. I mean, first of all, a lot of board members had always come to the hangar. So I was a known, I was totally known.
Yeah.
And so so he agreed to the terms, although I ended up staying for 45 minutes instead of a half an hour. So I screwed it up myself. But anyway, I got invited to a second interview in Syracuse with everybody, the board, the staff, the craft, the theater, school, the teachers. Maybe there were some students. I don't know. It was a room full of people who were shouting questions at me. Fine. I didn't care. So... finally, the board president, whose name shall not be mentioned in this program, said to me, because she could sense, I would say that I knew what I was talking about. She would say, a little arrogant. That's okay.
Uh-huh.
That's okay. She could think that. And she said, how are you? Because what the board had done when Arthur had left, who was really the original artistic director, when he left, the board did what they do all around the country. When the artist, the founder leaves, they put the power, they put the managing director at the top of the chart. Not a good idea, but with Jim, it was not a problem. So she said to me, how are you going to feel, Mr. Moss, reporting to Jim? And I didn't even think about it. I said, I'm not going to report to Jim. I'm not going to report to anybody. You're not hiring a clerk. You're hiring the artistic director, okay?
Yes, that's right.
And she was furious, but everybody else knew that that was the right answer. So they hired me.
Wow.
I didn't even think about it. I just said, I'm not going to report in.
Well, you're speaking the truth. And what should happen.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And Jim and I never had a problem.
Yeah.
Never, ever, ever.
Jim is so lovely.
He is one of the greats.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was how I got to Syracuse.
Wow, stage. Thank you for that.
So.
I love that story, because I've been in a couple searches, and been in that room where it's you against, you know, like 14 people all asking you questions.
And but your job in that is to take over the interview, because they want an artistic director.
Yeah,
they're not hiring a clerk.
Yeah,
so you have to. Your job as the artistic director in the interview is to take it over.
That's good advice.
And throw questions at them. Right.
I'm writing that in my brain, and I'm going to write it down later. Yeah.
Because that's what they want. They don't know it, and they don't know how to run the interview. So they think they have to ask you a lot of questions.
Yeah.
But in fact, you know exactly what you're talking about and how to handle it, and you have to direct them.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. And so now that we are at the point in your career where you are the third artistic director at Syracuse Stage with Jim. What was that like? And I'd love to know some of your favorite memories and shows.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
I think one of the most amazing things we did early on was Death in the King's Horseman by Wally Soyinka. It was a gorgeous production. Diane McIntyre did the choreography. I had a great cast. It was huge production. I couldn't get anybody else to take it so that we would save some money. But Wole Soyinka came in from Africa.
Oh, I've read about this.
Yes.
Yes.
August Wilson flew in from Seattle on his own dime because he'd never seen the play and he wanted to see the play. And we did a really good production of it, I would say. So... it was an astonishing production, and I was thrilled to have produced it and to have had all these artists working on it. You know, it's about the king. The king has died, and his horseman has to follow him to heaven. Now, the word suicide never is mentioned in the play, but he has to follow the king. That's all that's ever said. And the British consul in that corner of Africa didn't want a suicide. So he tried to stop it from happening.
Oh, wow.
And there was a whole, but ultimately he didn't. And Ruth Hart, you know Ruth?
I don't.
She's a doctor in Syracuse, but she also teaches at the school. Mm-hmm. And she always brings, because she can find the health issue in any play. She can find it, even if it's aging or parental abuse, whatever. She can find it and uses them, uses the play to teach these young doctors. And she said to me after the performance, I never thought at the beginning of this play that I would think what I'm thinking at the end, which is, of course, that the horsemen must follow the king. So it's a wonderful play, and I was thrilled to be able to produce it and to have all these people come and see it.
What was it like to have August Wilson in the building?
He was great.
Yeah.
We had, so Jim and I were supposed to have dinner with him, and Jim backed out at the last minute.
Oh, no.
So I was left alone with this incredible human being. But he was great. He was down to earth and funny, and we had a great visit. We had a great dinner.
Had you met him before that?
No, I'd never met him.
Wow.
And I did a lot of his plays.
Yeah.
But, no, he was lovely. He was a theater man.
Yeah, yeah,
you
yeah.
know, and we have rules in the theater about behavior.
We still do. Let's see.
Eva LeGallion came to a rehearsal of The Wild Duck that we did on Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a performance for her, for Miss LeGallion, right? And then at the end, she got up and walked out without speaking to the company.
Oh, wow.
And they were so hurt.
Yeah.
And I thought, I'm sorry, you may be the mother of the American theater, but that's bad behavior, ma'am, just to walk out.
What was it like when Aaron Sorkin came, when you did A Few Good Men?
Well, he was great. He came right backstage.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was cheerful and great.
He's an SU alum.
Yes.
In terms of the decade you were here and seeing, you know, you've come to shows recently, and is there a difference in audience behavior and play and the way that we view theater that you can notice?
No. Let's just say that. Mm. I know I can't talk about the audience, really. The best audience, you're going to be amazed when I tell you this story. You're going to be the best audience we've ever had. Mm-hmm. Was for Menopause the Musical.
I know, I've heard that before. People love that show.
And I don't make any apologies for having produced it.
Yeah, you should.
People said to me, Bob, you have to hold your nose and do it because you'll make a lot of money. And I said, yeah, well. And I thought, okay, fine, let's do it. We need the money. And we made over $1 million.
$1 million?
Yeah. And it was jammed every night.
Wow.
And the air in the theater was so high. The expectation was so high. I thought, I want this every night for every play.
Yeah.
I don't want it just for men. And Menopause, the musical, is so stupid. And I wish it were smarter. I wish it were better. But it served a role in people's lives.
Yeah.
Women, I would be in the lobby every night because I couldn't believe what was going on, and I felt the excitement and the eagerness to see it, and so I make no apologies for it. And they would tell me, this is my third time. I first brought my office, and then I brought my sisters, and I'm seeing it. This is my third time or my fourth time or something. They would come back over and over.
Why do you think? What was the appeal?
Talking about menopause, I guess.
But what about it, though? Because anyone can talk about menopause. Was it funny? Was it?
It was sort of funny.
And it was a musical, right?
Yeah. I mean, they were singing songs based on, I don't know how they got away with it.
Yeah.
They were using existing songs. Like, for example, I can't do this. In the jungle, the lion sleeps at night.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that was in... On the sofa, my husband sleeps at night. It was stupid, like, it was totally stupid.
You know what? Sometimes we need stupid as humans.
No, I
get it.
I can't criticize it because it sold out every single performance, and the aura of expectation was in the air.
Yeah.
And they didn't want me talking. They were like, okay, you get out of there. Get out of the way. And I knew it. When I'm standing in front of them, and I loved that sense coming from them, like, we're going to see it. You know, and so we did it. The first year, we made over $1 million the first year. And we did it a second year and didn't make quite as much. But
wait,
but it served
multiple years?
We did it a second time.
Wow. Maybe we have to do it
again. I think I was gone by then. I think so.
There is so much to talk about. So we are going to have a part two of this conversation.
Oh,
stay tuned to Community FM for more information about subscriptions and our 50th anniversary. Visit us at syracusestage.org. Syracuse On Stage is produced in partnership with WCNY with original music composed by Luther Masanto.